Cowboy Junkies have been around since 1985, bringing a predominantly laid-back sound to their music and others who they have covered. Their Trinity Session recording in 1988 propelled them onto the alternative rock scene, and their recent four-disc box set, the Nomad Series, is a creative work that has garnered significant attention. Lead singer of Cowboy Junkies, Margo Timmons, joins me today on WDIY. Margo, thanks for being my guest.
Oh, thank you for asking.
Now, Cowboy Junkies come to Music Fest Cafe in Bethlehem on February 27th as the second night of the band's upcoming tour. And through the years, the group has exuded a quiet, dark, mysterious quality that sparingly explodes with powerful energy. Talk a bit about the band's formation and its initial focus on cover music and how that led to the band's sound back in the mid-80s.
My brother Mike, who plays guitar and writes, and Alan, our bass player, played bands, mostly punk bands, in the early 80s. You know, they broke up and got back together and all sorts of things. And anyway, they eventually formed Cowboy Junkies, asked me to sing. And, you know, before being in a band, most musicians are fans. You know, that's why you get into music, because you love music. And so playing other people's music was something we did right from the beginning. None of us knew how to play, especially myself and my brother Pete, who was on drums. It was the first band we had. So playing other people's music allowed us to sort of just think about music and not think about lyrics or anything, and focus on my phrasing and just sort of opened it up a bit and allowed us to focus on and learn our parts and learn what we were doing. And so we discovered how much fun it was, you know. So that's why we started to do a lot of covers. Oddly enough, our first successful song was a cover.
I guess your brother John had been with this group that was just prior to Cowboy Junkies, and mm-hmm. then he left and you came in at that time.
Well, he was part of Cowboy Junkies. It was a matter of him leaving. Cowboy Junkies, what happened was the band prior to Cowboy Junkies was based in London, England, and Mike and Al were in it, and that broke up. And Mike came back to Toronto trying to figure out what he was going to do next. I think his plan was to go to New York and live there again. And Al was traveling, and Al eventually came back to Toronto, and they all sort of were wondering what to do. They were all living together in a house with my brother Pete, and my brother John lived down the street, and so they would jam at night, you know, like just like you do, you just play. And my brother Mike said, you know, this is starting to sound good, you know. We need a singer. So it's easier to ask your sister because she's just, you know, easy to boss around. So they asked me, and that's really how it came together. My brother John, very quickly, about 6 months into us really starting to tour and to do anything, left. And, you know, he just found the whole rehearsing every night, and, you know, it became more of a serious thing than just jamming, and I don't think he liked that routine, so he left. And when he left, the space that opened up in our band, now we didn't have two guitars, we had one, and that's when I think the Junkies really began to find their sound. And we quickly recorded our first album, which was White Stuff for Us Now, and that sort of was the beginning of our career.
Is that first recording, White's Off Earth Now, still available?
Yeah, actually, we just re-released it on album, on disc. Yeah, I mean, you know, those old ones are easiest to get through our site, you know, cowboyjunkies.com, or old record stores might have it. But, yeah, that's sort of where to go.
So that came out in 1986, and then what many describe as an island album, the Trinity Session, came out in 1988, and,
mm-hmm.
and included seminal works, Misguided Angel, A Slow Interpretation of Lou Reed's Sweet Jane, and Blue Moon Revisited, and it seemed like you really hit your stride.
Yeah, you know, we put out White Self Earth Now, and basically got into a van, and we just traveled and toured. And as we were touring, we would get on the phone and try to find a gig in the next town. I mean, it was literally town by town, state by state. And we just stayed out there. And while we were out there, I think we were, again, sort of perfecting our craft, figuring out who we were as a musician and as a band. But we are also all in a van together, always constantly listening to music, you know, the same music. And one of the things we discovered down south was country music, which is something up here in Canada we don't really have. You know, I mean, of course you can listen to it, but it's really not part of our tradition. We're more connected to folk than real country. So people like, you know, the Louvin Brothers and Willie Nelson and, you know, there's a bazillion of them, we started to listen to and really hear for the first time. We knew the names, but hadn't really listened. And also at that time, too, Dwight Yoakam put out his big hit Let record, and Lyle Lovett was coming up, and Steve Earle, and we were listening to them and their interviews. And their interviews always led back to these old guys, you know, these old country guys. So it opened up a whole other side of music for us. And that's when, you know, we were writing Trinity Session, and that's why on Trinity Session there's so much, you know, link to country, in the Patsy Cline song and the Hank Williams song and all that sort of stuff, because we were stuck in a van together listening to country music.
So that's where that came from, mm-hmm. from touring around a bit and then kind of getting inspired by all of that music in the South.
Yeah, and it blew our minds. You know, I mean, again, it was just something we were aware of but had never really listened to. And you know, we grew up in the 70s with rock, and then Mike and Al and I are of the age where punk rock was a huge part of our late teens, early 20s, so all the punk rock bands. And then sort of got more into jazz and blues after that. And this whole country thing was just not in our repertoire at all in our lives. And that tour of White Self Earth Now, we specifically went to Nashville so we could go to the Mud Country Music Hall of Fame and see all the you know, the guitars and whatever, you know, Patsy Cline's lighter and all that sort of stuff. We became a little bit fanatic.
And so, you know, that harmonica and mandolin sound that Jeff Bird has added with the group, he's performed with you for many years on tour, right,
mm-hmm.
and on albums. And,
yeah.
But not officially part of the band.
No. You know, Jeff is sort of a side musician, and he sort of likes it that way. He gets paid for every gig, and frankly, I think it's working out well for him. There are nights I'm playing for free, and he seems to get paid, so I don't quite get it. But anyway, I think I should rewrite my contract.
But, you know, on that Trinity Session album, Sweet Jane was just a big success, the cover of the Lou Reed tune, and Misguided Angel also got a lot of attention in Canada. And in the U.S., it seemed to get a lot of college and community radio
mm-hmm.
that exposed it. At what point did the band realize that it achieved artistically with that recording?
You know, it's a strange thing. When it's happening to you, you don't really know what's happening to you. You know, we used to have in our first, not the first van that with White Self Earth Now, the second one, which is a little bigger, we had a sticker on the roof of the van saying, "Are we stars yet?" You know? And you never, you know, when it's happening, you don't really know. You're just focusing on the next gig and the next thing you've got to do. And, you know, I think the highlight of that time was when Lou Reed, you know, personally said that he liked the song and thought it was great. I mean, that to us was, you know, an amazing moment in our lives.
Sweet June. Sweet Jane, sweet, sweet Jane.
Magazine covers and all kinds of weird stuff was happening, and I really didn't know what was happening. I just sort of, oh, okay, People Magazine wants to take my picture, okay. You just went and did it, and then went to your show, and I don't know. It's a funny, and now when I go back and I look at all those magazines, and, you know, I'm just redoing my basement, so I had to pull them all out just recently, and God, I did a lot, you know. I just didn't realize it at the time. So I think even now we're sort of still wondering, we're always amazed people come to our shows. You know, where do these people come from? It's a very strange thing. You do your thing, you put out your albums, you love your music, and you keep playing it, and if people love it, that's just great.
But it was a great kind of mix and juxtaposition of country and blues and jazz, and it really all came together. And since the Trinity Session, Cowboy Junkies released a dozen albums, and then in 2007 released a 20-year anniversary re-recording of Trinity Revisited with Ryan Adams, Vic Chestnut, Natalie Merchant, and Jeff Bird, all part of that project. And you performed with Boston Pops at Boston Symphony Hall.
Yeah, that was really scary. You know, those guys really keep time for serious time, and I'm not really good with that sort of stuff. I could feel my heart just pounding because I didn't want to be the one to mess it up. But those musicians know what they're doing. So they, you know, you could screw up and they just quickly just jump several beats and they're back on. And so I didn't really have to be as nervous as I was because they knew what to do. But, and it was, you know, singing with an orchestra behind you is, you know, incredible. You sound really good.
So you've had a chance to play a lot of interesting venues internationally, and I've personally seen Cowboy Junkies at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco in the earlier days and at Montreal Jazz Fest around the time of this 20th year anniversary recording, and then in the Beacon Theater in New York somewhere in between and Sellersville last year. Do any performance venues stand out for you? And maybe that's asking, like, who your favorite child is.
Yeah, you know, there are some. I mean, you know, there are stages that you remember because they're so, like being on Carnegie Hall, of course, standing on that stage, or Royal Albert in London, or those sorts of stages are just so ingrained in your mind because of the history and who's been on the stage before. And you can't get away from the fact that you're standing performing, you know, where Dylan stood, you know, or you know, Billie Holiday or whoever, you know, just like, oh my, you know, how did I get here? You always have that moment. So those stages are obviously ones you remember. But small halls, you know, you mentioned the Great American Music Hall, that small, the first one, I think they changed it over the years, but, you know, that I love that feel of that room. And so there's certain rooms that you just have a great feel. There's a little place in Northampton called the Iron Horse that just has a a really good vibe. I mean, it only seats about 200, but I love playing that room. And we've always sort of shaken it up. We've tried to play small clubs and larger ones and different kinds of venues. We've played in train stations and, you know, on trains. We did a train tour where we were playing on trains. We haven't done a cruise yet, but someday. I like to change venues. It just challenges you to try something new and to you're always trying to reach the audience. So each venue asks you to attempt it in a different way.
Well, you know, in 2010 through 2012, the Nomad series, volumes 1 through 4, were released, and Michael began working on the Wilderness volume first, huddled up in a cabin several days a month in Canada during the winter back in 2007, 2008, then put that project on hold and to work on related work that inspired this to become a 4-CD series. I guess that not initially being the intent.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately, the Wilderness CD became the last to be released. How did the Nomad series evolve from the point that the Wilderness recording was initially put on hold?
The songs themselves were coming together, but it didn't, you know, as you start to work on an album, as you work, it starts to take shape, and then you sort of understand what you're doing and what you want it to sound like, and it just emerges. You know, I think it's like a book. As you write it, you begin to figure it out as you go along. You have an idea, but it grows. It's organic. But with Wilderness, it wasn't. The songs were fine, but there wasn't anything kind of linking them together. There was no reason for these songs to be together or what we were doing. Then Mike went off to China, and spent 3 months there with his three children, two of which are Chinese girls that he adopted. And he was in the northern province of China and obviously had a real adventure. And it had a huge impact on him. And he started the music there, the sounds of the street, the sounds in the park. And he just had, I know what I want to do, I know what I want to write. And so came back and wanted to write Renmin Park and forget about Wilderness for now. Just, I want to focus on this. And it, you know, was fired up and excited. So we started to work on that. We had the Wilderness going on sort of in the back of our heads. We also wanted to do an album consisting of Vic Chestnut songs, which after his death was something we wanted to do something with him, obviously, beforehand, and then he died. So that was sort of lingering around. And so, you know, we had all these thoughts, and they were all happening at once. So, you know, we sort of thought, well, why don't we put them all together and put it out as a series? I mean, why do we have to sort of limit ourselves to spacing them out every 2 years, or because that's what the old record companies used to do? That tradition is gone of the old record company and their ways, so let's do it our way. And that's what we did. So we called it the Nomad Series, and for 18 months worked on 4 different albums, and it was, you know, pretty intense, but it was a challenge, and it was, these things always sort of make you, you know, just have an accomplishment, and which always makes you feel good about yourself.
And it seemed like volumes 3 and 4 were kind of complements to each other. I mean, you had Sing in My Meadow, which brings out some high energy on Third Crusade and Late Night Radio. Brother Michael writes most of the group's material, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And does he or the band have a love of late night radio?
You know, when we were all kids growing up in the 70s, and, you know, we were young kids in the 60s and teenagers in the 70s, and, you know, radio was our, you know, our salvation, and we all had those clock radios, you know, the ones that would sort of click, you could hear as the numbers would go down, the sort of half click. People in the 70s would know what I'm talking about, and I've yet to find one. But But anyway, that's what we would do at night. You know, you would put on your radio to go to sleep, and you'd listen to either baseball, or you'd listen to a talk radio, or you'd listen to, you know, in Montreal where we grew up, it was CHOM, C-H-O-M, and again, radio in those days was really free, so they could do whatever they wanted, and they would bring in this music that a lot of bands you'd never heard of, and you'd often go to bed thinking, I've got to find out what that song is, and then bang, you're asleep. So it was a huge part of our music education, was listening to late night radio.
Volume 4, The Wilderness, we've been talking about, was filled with amazing work like Unanswered Letter, We Are the Selfish Ones, Damage from the Start, Fairy Tale, and One That Rejects the Cold Weather for Which Canada is Known, among others. And all four of the CDs are connected by artwork by Enrique Martinez Celaya.
Mm-hmm.
And did the season associated with each of the CDs have any significance?
No, you know, the artwork came Enrique is a friend of ours. And we were working on this project, the Nomad series. We hadn't called it the Nomad series at that point, but Enrique had asked us to do open his gallery in Miami. So we went down there, and we were doing our sound check before the gallery opened and the party started. And we're walking around looking at his art, and on the wall was these four paintings, and it's called the Nomad series. And we're looking at it, going, these would make great, you know, album covers. And of course, because of our age, we always think in albums, the big artwork. So that's what, we went to Enrique and asked him, which is, you know, to ask an artist if we could take their artwork and, you know, sort of scale it down and put it on top of a little CD is asking a lot, because it doesn't transfer as well. And but Enrique is a very kind and wonderful, great, great guy, and said, sure. And we asked, you know, could we use the name? And it just seemed to make sense, you know. And weather and seasons, being Canadian, if you listen to our music, it's just constant. That's all we do is talk about weather. And the worse it is, the more you're shut in. And, that's where you sort of sit there and you read your books and you listen to your music, because there's nothing else you can do. So it's a big part of who we are and our music.
The tune Fairy Tale just has this great simplicity to it. And it's a gorgeous tune. And I noticed looking through the notes for that particular CD, The Wilderness, from the Nomad series, Unanswered Letter has, at least in material I was reviewing, had no lyrics published for that particular song. But I just wondered if that was maybe an omission, or was there any specific reason?
Well, I think, you know, Unanswered Letter is a song of... it's not finished. it wasn't meant to be finished. It's a song that we're going to take it out again on this road, and we constantly are changing it and shaking it up and just revisiting it. And so it was more of that intention that, you know, this song is just, I mean, we like what we did and that works, but it's going to change again and it'll change again. So it's sort of a, you know, I guess that's, you know, you call it, I don't want to call it unfinished because it's finished enough that we want to keep recording it, but I think it's just a song that will always be changing. And there's some songs, you know, like a Misguided Angel or something, that is just a pop song and it'll stay the same pretty much, you know, the attitude might change, but Unanswered Letter is more like a jam. It's open, it's not done yet.
I lost my heart, left it alongside the river. That blackbird clucking, songs he knows nothing about. That bird returning to home makes him sing.
So on the opening night and the third night of your tour, you'll be doing Trinity Session in its entirety. You did a lot of Nomad series when you were at the Sellersville Theater about a year ago.
Yeah.
And it was great. Do you have any idea how this show looks to be shaping up in Bethlehem?
Well, when we do the Trinity show, most of the nights, if we can, we try to do two shows, regardless of whether it's a Trinity show or not. But we try to do two sittings. When it's a Trinity show, the first one will be, a combination of new and old material in the beginning, and then might be more new, because if we're going to do an entire Trinity session, then we sort of like, okay, we're going to play some new stuff before we do all the old stuff. If it's a night that isn't Trinity session, in the old days when we were trying to sell Nomad, we would do all Nomad series the first set. And then second set would be all old songs. And that seemed to work really well. Now we're no longer really pushing Nomad series. It's just a part of our repertoire. We have a new album out called the Kennedy Suites, which is a sort of like a rock opera that tells the story of the assassination of JFK. So we'll probably be pushing that a little bit and maybe doing about three numbers off of that. So the first set will be sort of newer stuff, and then we'll go and do Trinity Session afterwards. And it helps us, too, because as much as we love the Trinity Session, we've done it a lot. So if we can sort of get our yeah-yes out at the beginning, then we go in to do the Trinity Session, and it's like, this is kind of nice, and it flows a lot nicer.
Well, it's definitely been another ambitious project, taking on the Kennedy Suite, which Michael, I guess, began working on back in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
You're involved to a lesser extent on that and on the CD, and includes many guest musicians and people like Josh Finelson of the Skydiggers, Lee Harvey Osmond, Ivy Myrie, the Potion Kings, and Sarah Harmer are all part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So is this kind of a, when you tour that, then it picks up kind of a little bit different sound?
Well, yeah, because we can't, the band on a lot of the Kennedy Suites is the Junkies, so there are a lot of the songs we can redo. But as you say, I only sing one song on the entire album, so of course we'll do the song that I do, which is the Jackie song called Disintegrating. We do another one called Take Heart, which seems to translate. It's a very quiet song, so that translates. This one, we're going to do a song called The Truth About Us, which is sung by Andy Mays of Skydiggers. The music on it is Cowboy Junkies, so, the only part that hopefully will translate is my doing the vocals. To tell you the truth, I don't know if that's going to work or not, because we haven't even started to rehearse it yet, so it'll be a mystery. And, of course it's not the same, but then neither is an album. Even our own albums, when you go on the road, you don't have as many instruments, you don't have as many players, you're limited. So you have to sometimes reorganize and rewrite and rearrange songs to make them work live.
There's a song on there, Bullet for You, a great song also early in that recording, as well as Lee Harvey Osmond doing the tune on their Parkland.
Oh, that's a great song. Yeah. I'd like to do that one.
yeah. Well, that would be great. We'd love to hear you perform that. When you come to town next week on the 27th of February here in Bethlehem at Music Fest Cafe, Margot Timmons of Cowboy Junkies, thanks for being my guest on WDIY today.
Well, thank you.
Hey, little princess, hey, little pea. Come down from your tower and yeah, you're the fairest one in the land. Try.